Blog Talk Radio.
All opinions, comments, and representations made by the hosts of Brilliant Ideas Radio and their guests are strictly for entertainment purposes. Well, at least that's what we think we're doing. Entertaining you. Welcome to Brilliant Ideas Radio. Brilliant Ideas Radio keeps you informed about all the awesome products and people in the food industry. Brilliant Ideas Radio is about food, music, and most importantly, having fun with your friends. And now, here is the man with the master plan, Brilliant Ideas. So join the fun and call the studio number at 714-242-5272. Once again, the studio number is 714-242-5272.
I'm joined this morning, like every Saturday morning, with my, I guess they call it two sidekicks, Laurie, the Jersey Style news girl, food news girl. Hey, Laurie.
Hi, good morning.
And Brian, as he calls himself, the wine czar. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, brilliant Laurie.
You notice I don't call you the wine czar. I just say you call yourself the wine czar, but... Anyway,
look, I'm so used to you calling me whatever you like to call me, and I do the same thing to you, so it's
That's
all
true.
Good.
It's all good.
Yep. It's all good in love and war. So, speaking of wine, Zari, you said, well, I actually noticed on Facebook you were a busy guy this week with some kind of event, and you said you would like to tell the folks out there about what you did this week in your wine event and talk about wine for a minute. And I have to be very quiet and shut up because you said if I didn't interrupt you, it would take you like 2 or 3 minutes. So without further ado, everybody, this is the Wine Czar. Everyone, stand up here.
And on that note, I think I'll go back to sleep. Anyway, I did want to mention something about what I did actually Thursday night. I did a wine dinner with a producer. And, we talk a lot about, the three of us personally off the air, we talk a lot about, what we like in wine and what we don't like in wine. And I was thinking during the dinner how, I always talk to you both about what you like, and I always say, well, you're not going to like this, you're not going to like that. But I would encourage people to go out and do wine dinners when they have an opportunity, because you never know, things that you think you're not going to like all of a sudden become so good with food. And that's the whole beauty about wine, is that, you pair it off with the food and it becomes great. Now, if you like to drink a specific thing and it doesn't matter what you're eating, you enjoy that wine, that's fine. But, I always think about this is what I do for a living, and this is what I'm constantly thinking about, is how to pair food perfectly with wine. And I would say 37 out of 37 people that were at this wine dinner Thursday night were incredibly amazed at the pairings, including pairing chocolate with a Syrah, with a dry wine, for dessert. So I just go out and encourage you all to, to go to wine dinners, go to tastings, taste food with wine, and then get a completely different experience about, what you're drinking.
Can I talk now?
You can talk. I stopped.
I didn't want to interrupt you. And there you go, folks. That was our whiny moment. And no. Sorry, Brian. No, that was very good. That was very good.
You know
very
how to
scary.
Ruin everything, don't you?
You just
know how to
the
ruin
whole,
everything.
The whole sound, didn't he?
Okay. Well, thank you, Brian. I agree. It ain't what you know. It ain't who you know. It's the wine you drink. So that's. Thank you for that information. Okay.
He's
Lauren.
Right, though. He's it's very true because I've had wine that I'm not crazy about. I've had them paired with meals and desserts. I've had that, too. I've gone to, you know, dessert pairings with wines, and it's so different. Plus, Brian, wouldn't you agree, sometimes it also you think differently about the wine, like you're loving it because you're in the moment and you're having a great time, so everything tastes better. Sometimes you pick out a wine, you go home and you drink it, and it's like, I don't know if I like it as much. You're kind of like in the moment.
Yeah, I would definitely agree that does happen a lot. You know, you're drinking, mm-hmm. you're enjoying yourself. Maybe you had a little too much to drink or, you know, whatever. But definitely being in the moment, enjoying it with the food, the experience. I had a wine producer with me. So, you know, having the sexy Italian with me, you know, and all the ladies looking at the sexy Italian, you know, everything's better, right? So,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a question. Speaking of pairing, I said this on Facebook this morning. So what is the best pairing with Laurie's favorite pretzel dogs?
I want those pretzel dogs so bad.
Oh,
so
you're killing me, Laurie. We're going to have a
I
long
know.
Conversation, you and I a closed-door conversation in a room somewhere without Mountain Man next to you.
But what would pair well with mustard? Mustard has got to have mustard with your pretzel dog. So what
mustard.
Would pair well with mustard?
Well, mustard is spicy, and I want something a little bit sweet. I would definitely go with a Riesling, like a German Riesling or a Pacific Northwest Riesling. It's got a little bit of sugar, for sure.
Okay.
Chenin Blanc, if it's a sweeter style Chenin, like in the Loire Valley, there are some areas where the Chenins are a little bit sweeter. That would be nice as well. But, yeah, something a little bit sweet.
Folks, do you actually believe he actually has a serious answer to my question? Pretzel dogs. I would say Mad Dog 2020 is a better choice for that.
Well, that's because you're just a mad dog.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, we had sausage last night with mustard on roll. It was delicious. And onions and peppers. And we had our, what were we drinking with that? We had the,
was it a calf?
We had a calf with it. It was good. We weren't complaining. We were laughing and loving it. But
well,
again, looking at brilliant.
It's because, it's because it made you happy. So, again,
right.
What does it matter
what
I say about pairing? You know, you ask me for a serious answer, I'll give you a serious answer. But drink what you like.
And by the way, I know we're supposed to be talking food news, but I saw your post this morning about Red Robin, and we talked about Red Robin last week and all the different burgers that were out there. Tell me, I know that it had some after effects for you, or maybe it was the beer, but is that the best burger in the world at Red Robin?
Look, you know I've admitted on air and to you guys personally that I've always loved Red Robin. I think their burgers are great. You know, when I go, I have to have the onion tower, you know, and of course the fries are unlimited. So
right.
I don't care where you can eat it at the most fancy restaurant that sells you a $100 burger. If you overdo you know, it's going to hit you. But no, I got the new Colossus.
TMI.
Yeah, I got the new Colossus burger, which is a limited edition. They're kind of tearing that off in conjunction with the movie Hercules, and I think you can buy, if you buy a gift certificate, you can get movie tickets or whatever. But we walked in the door, and you know how marketing is with these places. They smack you, you know, in the face with a giant sign. You know, as you're waiting to be seated, and we're looking at it, and I'm like, sounds good. So, I mean, I had to have it, and it was delicious. And it was,
wow.
it was barbecue and burger. So it was barbecued brisket that was chopped up, and then a burger patty as well.
Oh, that's rich.
It was good.
They don't serve wine. Do they serve wine at Red Robin? They don't. It's just beer.
No, they do beer and wine. Yeah.
They have some
wine on the list. I mean, I've never really paid attention to it, but, you know, they just have some standard Cab Merlot, you know, Chard, Pinot Grigio, that kind of thing, White Sin.
Well,
I wonder if Red Robin's in New Jersey. Is there any Red Robin? I have to go for that.
I think they're all over the nation, I believe, because when I was looking at this stock years ago, when I should have bought it at $8 a share way back when, but I think they're all over the place.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, you can go on their website and they have location, you know, finder. But, it was good, and I'll admit, I do venture off into the dark side once in a while. I don't want you to think I'm this food snob prude. I do venture off into the dark side, so.
Well, speaking of gas and moving along, we need to take we don't need to take a break yet. Laurie, do you have any food news?
I have some food news.
I messed up. I was looking at the clock, and I said, oh, I'm looking at the wrong clock. Oh, we still got 3 minutes before I got to...
I know, that's my fault. I always like to be a little early, so I always make all the clocks. He goes, oh, my God. All the clocks are, like, off, like, about three or four minutes, so I'm always on time. You're right.
You live in the South now. You could be a half an hour late and live on time and be on time.
I have this weird thing. I can't be late. I can't be late. No, it's just, you know... There's a 12-minute rule. I don't know if I ever mentioned that. It's a 12-minute rule. 12
well,
minutes
now
early,
you have 2 and a half
late.
Minutes.
You're not late, you're not early. Anyway,
all right, now you've wasted a whole minute. Now you got to go do a story in 2 minutes.
Okay, here we go. I have a peachy keen peaches.
About what?
I have a peachy keen story about peaches.
Oh, peachy. Okay.
Peaches.
Peachy keen. I have a peachy keen story. Anyway, I found this from a very, very sweet, dear friend of ours, Stuart Drexler. He had posted this little tidbit, and then I did a little more research. Okay, the peach is a member of the rose family, and it was first cultivated in China, and it was revered as a symbol of longevity. The image was placed on pottery and received as gifts with great esteem. And in the early 1600s, the Spanish explorers brought it into the New World, and then by the 1700s, missionaries had established peaches in California.
Huh. It was in the rose family? That's wild.
You know what? You just destroyed my appreciation of peaches, because you know how we say everything's made in China?
Mm-hmm.
Now it's peaches, too.
I know. I, for some reason, just was thinking this was just from, born from California. I never would have thought from China. Actually, the peach blossom, actually, in China, brides carry peach blossoms because it has so much meaning to it.
Really?
And it says, it says the peach blossom is Delaware's official state flower. The peach is the state fruit, of course, of Georgia and of South Carolina.
Yeah.
And Marco Polo supposedly saw peaches that weighed several pounds.
Have you ever seen that water tower? I think it's on the 95. It's shaped like a peach. I think it's in Georgia. Have you seen that, Brian?
In Georgia.
Yeah.
We've driven as far on 95 as Savannah. You know, whenever you get off to go to Savannah. So I don't recall.
I think that's where it is.
Remember.
It kind of looks like a big butt too from a distance, but it's actually a peach.
you always have to destroy the show.
Doesn't it? Because mine is always in the gutter.
Well, it does. It looks like from way in the distance, you say, look at that giant butt up there. And then you get closer, you say, oh, it's a peach.
You know, Laurie, I could say the same about his food tastes being in the gutter, but I won't.
Hey, what is a nectarine? Is that in the peach family? Does anybody know? I know I didn't ask if you looked this up, Laurie, but nectarines kind of taste like peaches.
Nectarines, I know they're part of a tangerine nectarine. They're like a blend of something. It's kind of like a wine. You know, you blend it. I don't know.
Well, no, nectarine, I think, is part of it. It's got the same kind of a pit as a peach.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
it can't be in like, the plum family. But I guess they're, like the dog, the Chinese crested that has no hair? It's the hairless peach. I mean, at least that's what I always think of it. Is the hairless peach.
And this is the pit and the peach is poisonous, right?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
That
yes.
I know for a fact. Absolutely. Yep.
I mean,
oh my
it
God.
Looks, it looks, if you open the pit, it looks like an almond, but it's poisonous.
Brian, you know the problem you had last night after eating a Red Robin? The dogs are sitting in here with me in the studio, and they've got the same issue you've got. Oh, I got to take a break.
Oh, no.
We're going
that wasn't
to our...
the problem.
Oh. No. We got to our first guest, and actually we taped this interview yesterday because the lady couldn't make it on the show today. So, Brian, you're not going to be able to participate. All you can do is listen. This is the only way I can keep you quiet other than using duct tape, but this is going to be a taped interview that we're going to go to next. So as soon as I find how to get this button to work.
So I can't finish
my three-letter peach story. Keep talking about peaches because the system's not working anyway, and I'll hold my nose with the dog here for a little bit.
Peaches were fed to hogs and used for making brandy in the colonial America. And, of course, China is the world's largest producer of peaches, with Italy second and the U.S. is third. They're low in calories, only about 37 calories per peach. This I was surprised at. Their juice makes for a great moisturizer, and it's used in many cosmetics.
Well, there you go.
See that? Mm. And California has 175 different varieties of peaches.
There you go.
Who would have ever thought that many varieties?
Not me.
Yeah. You know which ones I like? You ever see they have the white peaches and then the ones that are literally really flat, and I think they like call them donut peaches. They're
no.
very flat.
No.
See them, but they're not. They're not cheap, but you'll see them in the grocery store sometimes. Maybe not in Walmart, I'm sorry, but, you know.
I was going to say, that's probably what it is, not Walmart. No, we'll have to go to Evelyn's
and check
it out.
Can I go now to the next part?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Okay. Everybody hang tight. We're going to the taped interview and the break and all that goes along with that, and we'll be back here after the interview to bring on our next guest after this one, who is going to be talking about cutting boards and bottle openers, and I love this story. But first, we're going to be talking about plates with Tammy Carmona. So everyone, hang tight. We'll be right back.
Blog Talk Radio. No.
Yep, that's Bring It On by Maiden Dixie, and we're going to be bringing it on our next guest here in just a couple of minutes. And, Laurie, I'll tell a little story about how we got our next guest. Her name is Tammy Carmona, and Tammy contacted me, I guess it was about a week or so ago. I posted something on Facebook and talking about plating, and plating is not one of my best things that I can do. I can cook, but I don't know how to display. Of course, I can't color inside the lines when it comes to coloring books, but plating is something I can't do. And got a message from this lady, and she says, well, I can help you with this plating problem that you got. She says, I've got a plate company that I have, and she has really unique, very interesting plates that are unique shapes. And so if you got good food but don't know how to plate, you can take Tammy's product, and then her plates make your product look so good that you don't have to have an expert plating abilities like some of these chefs have, which I don't have. So anyway, that's how we got in touch with each other, and she's got a really cool website, and she's joining us today to talk about her product and her website and how she got into the business and if everything is working just right. Tammy, good morning. How are you?
Hi, great. How are you?
Doing great. Welcome to the show. Say hello to Laurie.
Thank you. Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Actually, what he said about Facebook, that was hilarious. When I saw your post, I was like, somebody doesn't know how to plate. Hallelujah. Now I'll show him how to do it right with it. I'm really beating it. It was funny.
Well, I brought Laurie on as my lovely assistant. She's usually the one that can help me with plating because I just can't do it. But anyway, you contacted me, and it was kind of funny that you did when you saw my post on Facebook, because I don't think you go on Facebook that often, just happened to see my post, and we said, we got to get you on the show. And first, let me mention to everybody, her website is carmonany.com. That's CARMONANY.com. It's Carmona, New York, basically what it stands for, .com, and you can find all of her products. So, Tammy, tell us how you got into this whole business with plates and your designs, and I'll turn it over to you. Just kind of give us a background history of how you got into this.
I'll tell you what. I started as a party planner and a chef. I used to work in a wedding hall and do weddings for up to 1,000 people. People make a beautiful hall outside, ballroom, but when it comes to the kitchen, they're kind of skimpy, and they don't understand that the crew needs space. So you don't have really a lot of space for a lot of worker working the line. And sometimes for 1,000 people weddings, in a restaurant it's a little different, but when you need 1,000 plates now ready, you cannot wait a half hour to serve until everybody gets their plate. It needs to be within 10 minutes range. So
right.
I had to come up with something that you don't need somebody to wipe the plate all the time, to make sure that the string beans is standing just right and the sauce doesn't spill. It has to be functional. My main thing is being functional. And then another thing was all the things that I wanted to bake with, like let's say I wanted to make a dessert like creme brulee. I don't want something that would look like stoneware and it's like heavy and this. My flavors are delicate. I want things to match my flavors. So I decided heck with it. And I cannot find also another company that would have one color that I can have any shape and this over the plate I want. I mean, if I want to serve sushi and then I want to serve dessert and then I want to serve a salad, whatever it is I want to serve on my menu, there is no other company that actually have one cohesive color to be able to serve whatever is on the menu without looking like a mix and match that you went to Home Goods and just picked up some plates. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
What?
And
yes.
looking at your website too, some of the designs you have, you know, with I call them the leaf design and some of these other different designs, it makes it, well, yeah, no better word for me to say, but makes your plate look pretty. It's really cool how you laid this all out. So it makes it simple to make it look good.
The thing is, in my website and in my catalog and at all when I show food to people, I don't show complicated food. I can do complicated food. I published a book about garmage. I can do a watermelon carving. I can do all these things. But not every chef has the time, not only the capabilities. And sometimes you need to really do things in a rush. So when I came up with this company, I decided it's going to have all the things. I'm going to fix the world. You know this kind of feeling? So I'm going to fix the world. And I fixed it at least on the plates. I'm working on the rest. But right now I fixed it on the plates. So you have over 350 designs that you can choose from. If you serve sushi, if you serve creme brulee, if you serve whatever it is that you're serving, I'm just giving that as an example, from soup to shrimp, so whatever it is your menu is, we have something that would match your menu, and yet no matter how many people sit on a table, like 10 people open a table, it's still going to look cohesive. And the thing is that it's made out of new bone. It's a new style. It's not exactly bone, because bone is very expensive and not practical for restaurants. It's not ceramic. Ceramic is ugly and heavy. It's also lightweight. So I took the texture and combined between the porcelain and the bone to make it affordable to almost ceramic. And the durability of bone. So it's like really every chef, I would have said wet dream, but we're on the radio. So dream. Every chef dream.
Well, you're right. It is affordable. When I went on to your, I don't mean to interrupt, when I went on to your website, I was surprised the prices are so reasonable. But to get off the subject for a quick question to you, I saw you titled some of your plating Nobu, and I've been to Nobu.
Yes.
Is that because you specifically designed it for his restaurant? Because I've gone there, and I've seen the now that I think about it, they use all those plates on your stuff. Is that
no, actually, it is a Japanese word, but and I just like that, so I named it. I had to name 350 plates. I had to come up with something. Some of them actually
true.
I mean, I have to apply trinket. It actually, I took the idea from IKEA that they have all kind of names that nobody understands in Danish. It actually means a triangle in Danish or Flemish or one of those languages. But so the names are pretty creative, and it's more like translating of words in different languages because I'm very into languages. Me, myself, I speak, I read, talk, and write four. So, you know, I'm all into that. Sino, for example, it means in Italian a wave. Betalo means a shoe horse, you know. So I speak all kind of languages, so I kind of interpreted that into the place as well. But
well, that's smart using the Nobu, because I think maybe he saw that or something, and he said, okay, I'm going to use this for my restaurant, because those plates looked like what he was using, so there you go.
Right, but you know what the idea of the plates also? First of all, before that, I mean, you know, you all the time hear about things, but you don't know who is really using it. Well, Gordon Ramsay, for example, in Planet Hollywood, his restaurant is with all my dishes. And actually, they keep on ordering, and I said, what's the problem? Are you having so much breakage? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. He said, no, we have a different problem. People steal the plates.
Oh.
He said he actually
had
people
steal.
I don't know, but they said that they had a lot of plates that they don't, I mean, they're missing stock until they took the videos, and they saw people steal the plates. I don't know.
How do you get a plate in your pants and get it out of the restaurant? I mean, I can see, like, silverware or maybe Sweet and Low packets or napkins, but they steal the plate.
It's the first time I hear it. But a plate?
I'm telling you. Okay, it has his logo also, so I guess it's like a souvenir. I can do the logo. I can do custom. I can do whatever you want. That's another thing. If you have a certain style that you like to do, every chef has their own thing. I serve soup, you serve soup. We both have different things. I serve with a piece of bread, you serve it with crackers. Everybody has their own style. You can't really have a cookie cutter and say this cookie cutter has to fit to everybody. So what happens is that from 300 plates, I can actually custom make a design for you. It's no extra charge. Nobody else does that.
Very
wow.
No other company
That's
will
amazing.
Custom make for you at 300 plates and up. You know, sometimes you have only three restaurants. You don't need 50,000 plates. You only need 1,000. And I can actually custom make not only the logo, the shape, to match to you. Nobody else does that. You know why?
Okay,
because I'm
brilliant.
Coming from because I'm coming from the kitchen. Most people that sell plates are just dealers. They're just trade people,
right.
You know. They see an item, they bring it. It fits you, not yes, you know. They don't care. They don't
people
really
do
care.
A flame.
Well, let's talk about
right.
Oprah Winfrey. Now, I see you have a section on your website about Oprah Winfrey's favorite plate. So tell me about the connection about you and Oprah Winfrey.
Actually, I did for her let's start from the beginning. Somebody gave her a gift, one of my dishes, the Monroe Trio, and she fell in love with it. And she said that she wants to see some of my dishes in her Christmas table that she's doing Oprah favorite thing. And
mm-hmm.
I came down to her place, and I spoke to her producer and her, and they were choosing a couple of items. And then I went to the room where they're going to be displaying everything, and I thought I'm going to die. Every table was a different tablecloth, everything. It was just such a mix and match. And beside my dishes, they had some other odds and ends, whatever. Being a designer and a real OCD, that things have to look to perfection, I decided, you know what, heck with that. I'll make for you tablecloth, I'll make for you the design and whatever, I'll take care of that table. And she was like, but we have a stylist. I said, you should fire her if that's what she gave you. Anyway, so I went down and I did the entire thing, and they loved it. A year after that, they made me as one of their favorite things because the way that my dishes were used for all her food, she went crazy for it. And they wanted to order it for one of her parties and whatever, so we kind of started to have connections with her. So we have Gordon Ramsay as a customer. We have her as a big fan. And we have a couple of others. I mean, MGM Hotel and many others. So it's pretty,
wow.
You know.
Well, congratulations. Laurie went on the website, and she was saying, okay, brilliant. I want this one, and I want this one. I like this one, and I really like this.
There was
it's
one
like,
with three little cups in a row. Like, I mean, like they sat like little tulips almost. They're beautiful. And you're right. You know what? They did look very thin and fragile, but now listening to you, they're durable.
No, they're not. They can't be fragile because the people in the kitchen really don't care. The one that washes the dishes, let's face it, they don't care really. They just dump things
rushing.
In the washing machine. They just want to finish. I mean, exactly. With all due respect, they're one of the more important people in the kitchen, mind you, because if they back up, the whole kitchen is backed up. But like you see, I know it from the back end. It has to be stackable. Not everybody lives in the suburbs. I live in New York. We don't have place for anything besides mice. You know what I mean? So forget it. It has to be stackable. It has to be durable. It has to be lightweight because we just walk a very far distance between the kitchen to the table, and sometimes a 16-ounce steak is not only the 16-ounce steak. It's a 16-ounce. It's the potato that come with it. It's the drink that they carry on the same tray. It's the plate itself weighs 3 pounds, you know? So here you have the same plate in a pound and a half smaller.
Tammy, you are dead on with this. You know what's funny? I never really thought about it. I waitressed for years when I was selling real estate. I was a waitress on the side. I waitressed for years. And I waitressed back in the early 80s. So the plate,
right.
It was, you're right, the oval plates were so heavy. I mean, I built up my arms doing this because the plates were so heavy. Then they would put, like, the steak on it, the potatoes. And I would do, like, a three-plate on my one arm. And that was so heavy. And now that you're bringing this up, I'm thinking, she's dead. I like this.
It's not only a restaurant. Right. It's not only a restaurant. When you're serving a wedding, 1,000 people, you have to walk 100 tables sometimes. It's a huge hall. Let's say Cipriani on Wall Street, right? This is the hall I worked a lot. I mean, it's like a mile walk for the waiter back and forth within the hour that they serve the main meal.
True.
It's over a mile, and they have to walk with that with 10 places because they're not going to go back and forth for every two. It's a very long distance, and you can't serve a half a table. A half a table should wait. And even if you do a wait of a table, which is a lot for a wedding, imagine 1,000 people is 100 waiters, and you have to feed them too. So you have to think about it. The waiter has to be practical with 10 plates at a time, and a tray like that is sometimes I would not be able to lift it.
Right.
So I'm thinking about the dishwasher guy, the waiter, the owner itself. You don't want a lot of breakage, even if it has edges. And let's say another thing, practicality. You want to use, for example, a coffee cup. All coffee cups that you know, that's all they do, a coffee cup. Now, look at my Monroe mug. It could be a coffee cup. Because it does not have a handle, it could be a souffle, a dessert plate. It could be a part of your main dish if you bake it.
Interchangeable,
like exactly. It could fit, and if you want something from the Monroe collection, but you like the other collection better, it fits in. It blends in. It's the same color. You don't look like you just went to the market and got odds and ends for closeouts.
Mm-hmm.
And the main
now
thing is the monkey dish. How many times do we have a problem with a monkey dish? Something so small and stupid, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has a hard time with a monkey dish.
Before you came on the air, we were talking, too, that you sell both wholesale and retail. And if people want to get in touch with you, they're in the restaurant business, in the wholesale side of it, they can contact you via the email, by your email and through your website, or they can call you direct. You have no problem with them calling you direct. And I'm going to give everybody, if you don't mind, give your phone number, which is 917-681-5670. You can get in touch with Tammy and talk about if you're looking for a wholesale and buying a lot of her plates for your restaurant
website.
Or whatever.
Right, the website that you said is good priced. It's actually retail price, so wholesale is a lot better price. And I work with you. I really work with you.
Well, they are really
not just
nice
another customer.
Designs, and the thing about it, like I said in the very beginning, is they make it so you don't have to spend a lot of time plating and, like you said, wiping off the plates and be an artist, per se, to put out your food. And there's a lot of artists there are a lot of chefs that do that, but like a dub like me, you make it simple. You can just put the stuff on there and send it out because the plate is so nice.
Yep.
That's what takes the work out of it. Plus, it makes it more efficient if you're in a catering business or in the restaurant business. So it's really cool. Everybody should check out your website, which is www.harmonany.com. And is there anything else you wanted to add before I let you go,
Tammy?
I
just wanted to say one more thing about the color. A lot of people asking me for super white plate. They have a mistake that they're thinking that super white is clean. It's not. Food does not come with super white. There is no white food. Even mashed potato that is considered white, it's actually beige or off-white. My plates are bone color because it's a warm color. Warmth actually adds to the food a certain home flavor. Actually, the plates have to be a picture frame to your food, not overwhelming it. That's why it's only white, but the white is a very soft cream, like vanilla color, I would call it. Just enough warmth to it, but not the gray shade that actually makes the food look dull.
I like what you said, a picture frame for your food. That's perfect. That's what your plates do.
Picture frame for your food. I love that. Yep.
That's a fantastic tagline. Well, we appreciate you joining us, and keep us posted. If anything new comes along, you got a new line or things you want to come on and tell all of our listeners about it, contact Tammy. You can get her, like I said, on her phone line. Go to her website at CarmonaNY.com and check out all her plates. And we really appreciate you joining us.
You can give my number
one more time, 917. Just like an infomercial. Call 917-681-5670. You can get in touch with Tammy, and she will help you out picking out plates for your restaurant or catering business.
Tammy, I love your spunk. You're adorable.
Thank you. Thank you so much. By the way, if you Google my name, you'll be able to see a lot of things I've done, like the Twilight Wedding. I've done the entire wedding, flowers, decor, and everything, and other things. So, yeah, some very interesting stuff. So Google my name. You'll find some interesting things.
Right. Well, thank you, Tammy. We're going to go to another break. We appreciate you joining us this morning. Have a nice one. Everyone, stay tuned. We'll be right back in just a couple of seconds.
Just when you thought radio was safe. A new kind of radio is on its way. Food, music, and friends. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Coming in 2014.
I'm Ray Lampe, Dr. Barbecue, and I'm here to tell you about the Big Green Egg, the ultimate cooking experience. The versatility of the Big Green Egg is unmatched as a grill, a smoker, and even an outdoor oven. Sear steaks at 800 degrees, slow smoke a perfect slab of ribs, or even bake a crispy pizza or a pecan pie. That's why I cook on the Big Green Egg, the ultimate cooking experience.
Me, I wanna hold it.
And we are back, everybody. Hope you enjoyed that interview with Tammy Carmona. And we're back live. We taped that yesterday. And Tammy was a great guest. And like I said several times, check out her website. And you can find out more about her unique plates and all that's going on there at Carmona, New York, or NY.com. And Laurie and Brian, you're back with me, right?
I'm here.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was taking a nap. I didn't.
Yeah, well,
I missed the whole thing. No, seriously. Actually, I looked at her website and I really love the plates there. And you know, a long time ago, I remember Chef looked at one of my dishes and they said, you know, your plating is lovely, but you should use a classic clean color because it'll look even better. And you know, to have everything one color is, you know, is always the best.
Well, she was an excellent guest, and she's welcome to come on anytime. And these guys are coming up next. They've been waiting in the wings patiently while we went through that taped interview. And these guys, I don't know if you've seen this on my Facebook page, Laurie or Brian, but I found them on Kickstarter. And they're coming on to talk about their product. I'm sorry to laugh, but it's called the Bob Gourd. Every time I see that, I think of that movie, What About Bob? But they're coming on. They've got a cutting board that's made out of bamboo that has an attached bottle opener. And I think I've got, I'm not sure who's calling in. It was supposed to be Josh Lochner. I don't know if Pablo's calling in too, but good afternoon, guy. You there?
Hey, yeah, it's only Josh. I'm flying solo today. Pablo had some things come up.
So we'll just pick on one of you, that's all. So I was checking out your Kickstarter project, came across it, and your video, first of all, it's a great video. So
a riot.
It is a riot. I have to ask, how the heck did this idea come about? I mean, there had to be some Coronas and some other alcohol involved with this idea.
Well, we actually, we used to work for a large, houseware company, and this was a product we actually had worked on for about a year, believe it or not. Not constantly, obviously, but we had a lot of iterations with prototyping and whatnot, and that was actually the final design that we have now. But during this process, the company had gone under, and we had invested so much of our own time into this project that we wanted to, bring it to market ourselves. So that's how we ended up on the Kickstarter thing, but our main goal is we're trying to like make cutting boards more interesting because cutting boards are as simple as they are. They're cutting boards. They're kind of boring.
They are kind of boring, and you guys have put it a new twist on it. And I have to say,
cutting
up vegetables and things with a very sharp knife, that's what I think of, grabbing a beer and opening up a beer at the same time.
Yeah, we had a magazine quote us on that. Same thing.
So you guys, it's actually made out of bamboo, and you actually have a miniature size, which you can carry it like on a picnic and things like that. And actually, to me, I think the miniature size, I like that one best because people do, they go out on a picnic or whatever, and they don't have anything to cut on. And, of course, you always need a bottle opener available. And then you've got the one that's got the handle on it, which I love your video. You just slide it to the edge of your counter and you can open up your beer. So it's called Bob. You got a website which is bob-board.com, and of course the Bob stands for what's the board the Bob part stand for again?
Bottle opener board.
There you go.
So, yeah, the name just came along because I mean Bob's just an ordinary guy, you know, and he's an extraordinary cutting board.
Well, I love it. Now, you've also got a model that's got a knife sharpener in it too, right?
Yeah, and that was another thing we worked on, and I can explain that a little bit better. This is our second time on Kickstarter. Our first one we were asking, you know, probably for a little bit too much money on there. So we had a bunch of other products that we were offering too then, but it was just going to be too much. So we did lower our goal, and we're offering now the knife sharpener board, which has a knife sharpener, same color as the bottle opener, which is that nice, like, green color. And so the knife sharpener, obviously, you sharpen your knives and then clean it off, and then you're ready to go. So you only have to take one thing out of the drawer, and it's easy to use because it's V-groove, so you really don't have to know what you're doing. Just slide it in.
Now, a wild and crazy guy like me, what if I want one with a knife sharpener and a bottle opener?
Now, that crossed our mind, but I thought that might be getting a little bit too And this way you have to buy two, you know, so.
You need to add a corkscrew. And what else do you need to add, Brian? Let's see, a corkscrew.
And maybe like an MP3 player or something. I don't know.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, see, but the problem for you, Brilliant, is that you need the knife sharpener because you wouldn't have the bottle opener and you'd open up your beer with your knife and then you took to sharpen it with.
That's true. Good
so
that's
you
true.
Need to have
too.
The bottle opener and the knife sharpener together, so I agree with you there. You know, we should have both to avoid, to keep you from using your knives as a bottle opener.
Well, all kidding aside, you caught my eye. Because I go to Kickstarter, and I'm always looking for people that have some really cool ideas in the food industry so we can fill up dead air and have something to talk about each week. But when I saw yours in the video, it's very interesting. Now, you're trying to raise, I believe, is it $4,000?
Yeah, $4,000 is like our bare minimum. At $4,000, we're still going to be coming out of pocket just to get this product to people's doors. But, you know, we put so much effort into this thing. I mean, we just like, you know, it's been on the back of my mind forever, especially since our first attempt at Kickstarter. So this time we're going to do it for sure. We actually have some fans, like some diehard Bob fans. It's pretty funny. But the thing is, it is a very niche-y product, and a lot of people don't understand it because they don't get the point of having a bottle opener in their cutting board. But once you get it in your hands, and that's what changed the whole thing for us too. That's why we need to make this product, is when you get it in your hands, you're like, wow, this is really cool. But yeah, seeing it's one thing, but yeah, when you actually have it, it's like, I don't know. It really goes together well.
Yeah, there's a lot of marketing you guys can do with that because I think you could contact like Corona and folks like that and making everybody.
Yeah,
oh,
we did.
For the Corona and that bottle opener. I mean, I can see it all.
Well, if you got any contacts with Corona, let me know because I reached out to them. I didn't really hear anything back, but we did get in Playboy in Netherlands recently, so that's pretty exciting.
Well, there you go.
So they featured us right next to an Aston Martin, 250,000 Aston Martin.
No.
It's pretty funny.
Really
big press.
What is the Bob Ford going to retail for if I want to buy one?
Retail, when we bring it to market, like, the small one will probably be around, like, $16.99, and then the larger one will probably be in the low 20 range, maybe, like, $21, $22, somewhere around that area. Kickstarter, we have our prices lower.
Now, one thing I did not know this until I watched your video, but bamboo is a natural microbial, that's the word I want.
Yeah, you got to say that a couple times to get it. it actually, bamboo, right from there, it kills bacteria. Well, it keeps them away from your food, let's put it that way.
Yeah, it's one of the best surfaces to use now.
It's what, Brian?
I said it's one of the best surfaces to use now for cutting. A lot of chefs love it. I mean, I love bamboo boards. I use either commercial, polyethylenes, which, you know, you do have to put some bleach on every once in a while to kill them.
Right.
But bamboo and the polyethylene are the best ones for your knives, too, as far as protecting your knives. They seem to be the best. But
Josh, you ought to see this guy, Brian. When he comes to a party and he does the
cooking. It's unbelievable.
It's like a surgeon. He's like these surgical tools.
He rolls out the knife.
He rolls it out on the board. This is the guy you want out there using your bamboo board with the bottle opener. But you don't need that corkscrew because he's a wine czar too, so you need to add the corkscrew to the side. But
no, you can just break the bottle with – you can just take the bob and snap the bottle in half with that, so like a paddle.
Well, there you go. There you go, Brian.
Sure. Well, I mean, if it's sparkling wine, I could use the board to saber the top off.
There you go.
That's all. Make sure there's one hard edge on the board so that we can use it as a saber, and then you have a multi-purpose tool. You know, it's like Chef of the Future. You know, the honeymoon is if it can core apple, then it can do anything.
There you go.
Well,
now,
the reason it has a bottle. Sorry, what's up?
Go ahead. Reason it has a bottle. What were you going to say?
Oh, the reason it has the bottle opener, though, is more or less because, you know, there are certain beers or cocktails that you do need to use the bottle opener for, you know, to, you know, cut up your fruits,
right,
I would say.
The lime, exactly.
More or less. Yeah, with the wine, I mean, I don't know how much wine you put. I guess sangria.
No, your lime.
Yeah, that's the main goal. Or, I mean, people that are tailgating, you know, for the, you know, they can use their cutting board and have a bottle opener handy, and people that go backpacking and stuff like that. It's nice, lightweight, one single tool, you know, because cutting boards are important for backpackers.
I just kind of see
you
guys.
You know, Williams-Sonoma, you know, might be interested in this, too. I don't know. I mean, you guys got, you know, I'm sure you have great marketing plans and stuff, but Brian gave a nice little tidbit about for the chefs to tell them how it's, you know, it's easy on their knives. But Williams-Sonoma, I mean, there's a lot of avenues you can take this when you're, you know, once the Kickstarter is complete.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. We got some. We actually have some interest already in some bulk orders, but you know, we just want to make sure we get our funding first because we don't want to go out without that. So.
Exactly.
Well, I think you should have the Swiss knife of cutting boards when you're all done. So just keep adding all kinds of things to it.
Keep
now, how far
to it,
along
huh?
are you? Yeah, how long are you? Far along on you on the Kickstarter project? You've got what, about halfway to your goal?
Well, we've only been live for a little bit less than a week now, and we're one quarter of the way there. So we're moving right along. So
wonderful.
Should have no problems.
Now,
so,
people, if you want to find out more about the Bob Board, you can go to the bob-board.com, and I think that directs them to the Kickstarter project, right, Josh?
Yeah, there's a direct link to Kickstarter. We also have Indiegogo on there in case anybody wants to donate that way. It's a little bit easier. You don't have to, you know, have an account. But either way, and also you can just go directly to Kickstarter and just type in Bob Board and it'll come right up.
Well, we wish you the best of luck with the Bob Board. I think it's really unique, and keep on pushing it. And we'll actually mention it on our Facebook page, and people who listen here, go check it out. They've got some neat little gifts that you can get if you donate to the project. And the goal is not that big, so they should be able to hit it over the next – how long did you say is left? Like the next 2 weeks?
We got 35 days left, actually, so more than a month left.
Oh, wow.
Everybody go out there. Every buck helps, and, you know, see if you can get this Bob Board off it and running into the market. And thanks for joining us, Josh. We appreciate it, and good luck to
you. Thank
you
for having me. Thank you very much.
Take care. All right, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Check it out. Check out his product and go to bob-board.com. And, guys, I'm wanting to take a brief little break here and play some music, and then we're going to be bringing on, I had to do a swap up for those people who thought we're going to have the grunge country band Sawyer at this point. They had an emergency and had to, we're going to have them on a later date. And then this gentleman contacted me just in the nick of time to put them on the show. And we're going to be talking about, you like this, Brian, it's urban farming. And it's kind of like your
I noticed that. I'm interested. Yeah,
it's pretty interesting what they're doing in the inner city in New York, and they're going to be coming on to talk about that. His name is Sean Michael Fleming, director and co-founder of EcoStation NY, and they've got this project also on Kickstarter called Farm in the Sky. So we're going to take a real brief break, and I think I'll play a little Joey Madison City Lights, since we're going to be talking about farming in the city, and we'll be right back to talk to Sean. Everyone hang tight.
I can't take these city lights. Think I'll head west and drive all
Project that I saw on Kickstarter, and you guys are doing this project on Kickstarter called Farm in the Sky, and the company is called EcoStation NY, and I wanted to have you on the show because it's all about sustainable urban agriculture, and wanted to have you on just to tell everybody a little bit about what you're doing, what you've been doing, and then the project itself that you're trying to push through on Kickstarter.
Sure. The organization is EcoStation New York. We were formed about 5 years ago, and our emphasis is on sustainable urban agriculture and food justice. Here in the inner city, there's a growing problem of diet-related preventable illness, such as type 2 diabetes and obesity, and these are tied to issues of food access, and these issues are most prevalent in poorer areas. So in the neighborhood where we are in Bushwick, Brooklyn, there's elevated rates of these illnesses, and there's high rates of poverty, up to 38% in some areas of the neighborhood. So we decided to start some farmers markets and to bring fresh food to the neighborhood, and also at the same time keeping an eye towards sustainability and keeping things local. So we work with local family-owned farms. In addition to the farmers markets, we started doing, we founded an urban farm, and to make the connection to the environment, which is also a concern of ours, we always use sustainable organic practices. Our latest farm is at a high school, Bushwick Campus, which is actually home to four high schools, and at Bushwick Campus Farm and Greenhouse, we work with the 1,500 staff and students there, and we sort of paint the big picture because we have a greenhouse and we grow things from, we go from seed to plant, and then we actually have cooking classes, so we seed the plate and then back to the compost pile. So it's really like a complete picture that we're painting about human and environmental health and their interconnectedness.
Now, how long have you been doing this? How long have you been doing this?
5 years.
5 years? I'm just curious, I'll interrupt you for a second, just curious to ask a question. So how much food do you produce right now through these programs?
Well, through our growing programs, it's about, at the farm, it was about 6,000 pounds last year. A lot of that is in microgreens. Some of the food that we produce is sold at our farmers markets, which we have five of. And some of it's used in cooking demonstrations with students, and some of it is sold to restaurant clients to help support the program.
Very interesting. I know Brian is real big on this because we've had another guest a few weeks ago,
on that was talking about the same type of thing of growing in school systems and trying to teach children how to farm. And Brian, do you have any questions you want to ask Sean?
No, of course I applaud what's going on. You know, I grew up in New York City and I grew up in Queens, but it's the same concrete jungle. And where do you go? You know, where do you go to have a garden and to plant? You create rooftop gardens. You find areas. You have community gardens. But I'm actually on your website now, looking at the first pictures of the Bushwick campus. Now, I guess the rooftop stuff that you're doing, the farm in the sky, everything's going to be in raised beds, I'm assuming.
That's correct. Our current project is Farm in the Sky. As we say, sustainable urban agriculture, five flights up. And this is going to be our second rooftop farm. The first version of Farm in the Sky was a few years back, and the location wasn't really optimal. It was an older building, a very old building, and the roof wasn't that great. So we've now moved to a building that's just being completed, so it's going to be all new. And as you were saying, most of the planting will be done in raised beds, and we're going to be making it a flexible design as well, so most of the raised beds will be on casters.
Yeah, now here's actually a technical question. Only because I've been told to not use certain types of wood for beds. I have raised beds in my garden because we have a very high water table, and everything would rot if we just let it go into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm looking at the pictures, and what kind of lumber do you use? Because I was told that you shouldn't use pressure-treated lumber because of the chemicals would leach into the soil. So I'm just curious
right.
to know what kind of lumber you are using to build your beds.
Well, at the Bushwick Campus Farm, we use wood that's not pressure treated.
Okay.
But then it won't last as long. So we typically treat it with linseed oil, and then we actually line the beds with landscaping cloth.
Yeah, I noticed that you put a weed barrier down.
Yeah.
So you're planting things. Well, if you're doing microgreens and stuff like that, you don't have to worry about a lot of soil for roots to go into. Anything
right.
that you wanted to grow with deeper roots, what are you doing? Are you cultivating the soil and actually doing in the ground?
Well, we do run soil tests, everywhere we plant. And at Bushwick Campus, we built the lined beds before we got a definitive reading back from the soil results, because we just assumed that the ground wasn't going to be suitable, but it turns out it is. But most plants don't require more than 6 inches, unless it's like a tuber or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which most of the things we grow. And the microgreens that we were talking about, those can just be grown in flats.
Right.
Hey,
yeah.
Sean, this Kickstarter project that you're working on, which is called Farm in the Sky, so what is your goal with the Kickstarter project? What are you intending to do with the money you're trying to raise?
The Farm in the Sky project, the Kickstarter for it is to finish buying some of the supplies needed, and also to run our youth program. We have a youth program that starts in mid-July that we need funding for. And EcoStation, part of our mission is about empowering those that we work with. So we hired 14 kids from Bushwick Campus High School. And over the course of the summer, there are interns, and it's like a paid apprenticeship. So they'll be helping design and build Farm in the Sky. And they learn so much from the experience. Here in Bushwick, the types of jobs kids can get over the course of the summer are pretty dismal. It's either fast food or retail. And this is a really powerful experience for many of these youth. Sometimes it's like the first time they see vegetables growing, And it's certainly some of the times that they've tasted some of the vegetables that we grow.
Yeah, on the video,
so it's a really important
your Kickstarter project, I can tell that the ones that you have in the video seem very excited about the project, that some of the photographs and things I've seen on your Facebook page and other places, that like you said, some of them don't even know what a farm is, much less, you know, seeing things grow like that. So it looks like it's something that they're all kind of taking to and enjoying.
Yeah, you know, they've been drawn to it for different reasons, but we've really developed some fantastic young leaders. And before I started working with the groups at the high school, you know, I was a little trepidatious about teenagers, like they had natural skepticism like most people have. But after working with them, I have renewed faith for the future of humanity. They're inspiring. They really are.
Cool. Now, tell everybody about the project itself, how much you're trying to raise, and how much time is left in the project.
Right. We're trying to raise $30,000. We have just under 2 weeks left, and people can go to Kickstarter.com, and it's Farm in the Sky, and it's all hyphenated. It's a takeoff on Pie in the Sky, but it's Farm in the Sky.
Well, like Brian said, it's a wonderful project that you're doing and what you're trying to do in the inner city, and it's kind of cool that to be able to take the tops of buildings and convert them into places to grow produce and teach the kids all about farming. And I applaud you and tip my hat to you for what you guys are trying to pull off there. And everyone who's listening in to the show, check out the Kickstarter project, or you can go to their website also, which I have listed here on the show. It's ecostationny.org. You can find out more about the project and also all the things that they're doing and all the projects they've been working on in the past. And it's really encouraging to hear what's going on in New York. And I guess, is it also going on in other places all over the country?
It's a growing movement. The localization of our food systems, you know, it's really a growing movement with increases in farmers markets and renewed interest in local food. I think people are starting to really wonder where the food that they're eating comes from.
Very interesting. Well, we appreciate you joining us this morning, and thank you for taking time. And we'll send people your way. We'll also mention you on our Facebook page and wish you the best and hope you reach your goal.
Thank you for the invitation. Have a
great
day.
You're welcome.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Pleasure talking to you.
And there you go. Check out the website, like I mentioned a minute ago. You can find out more about the project for Kickstarter and what their EcoStation NY is doing. And you guys, we've got about 14 minutes. Did you have anything you want? Well, first of all, about this topic, Brian, anything else you want to add about this topic before we go to something
else?
Well,
I don't know. I don't know if you actually went on the website and have seen the pictures of his Bushwick campus.
Yep.
I mean, I am amazed at what they're doing and what's growing in 6 inches of earth, because often I'm thinking that we didn't make our raised beds high enough or deep enough with drainage and everything, but this is inspiring me to go relook at my own garden and say, okay, I need to change a couple of things, and I don't have to necessarily use the wood that I used, because I built everything in cedar, because the cedar's not supposed to rot, and the cedar's rotted. So, it's incredible. We didn't have as much of a movement like this when I grew up as a child in New York, and, you know, for us to experience vegetables, we had to go out into the country and go to someone's farm.
Right.
See this. But my take on this is that, you know, a lot of these kids grow up in really tough neighborhoods, and this is creating incredible values that they can take with them, you know, for the rest of their life.
Exactly.
It's not just about growing vegetables.
I mean, they could become famous chefs somewhere. Yep. You never know. These kids, you know, someone could become a famous chef. You know what, the Kickstarter, people don't understand sometimes, you don't have to donate a lot of money. I mean, a few dollars, if everyone just, you know, not everyone, but, you know, whoever, you know, it adds up when a few people call up and donate here and donate there, especially for these kids like this. I mean, their self-esteem, it's just amazing to me. And he was a sweet boy. He sounded really, I mean, what a great great opportunity for these kids to have, like you said, Brian. I mean, they could go up to be, you know, hotel managers. And they could take this, it's food. You can take it every, you know, many avenues.
You take these values that you learn and you apply them to the rest of your life and to your professional life, no matter what it is that you become.
Mm-hmm. These are building blocks.
Yep. For the foundation of your life. And I think that that's, you know, it's so important. And I just love to see people out there doing this kind of stuff, because you think of how many kids, you know, they grow up with parents that don't care and they wind up on the streets and they have no values. And what happens to them? You know, but here you have kids that want to learn, that want to improve themselves, and they're excited about this. I mean, you look at the smiles on their faces, and you know that they're doing something, and they're proud of what they've accomplished.
Right.
Yeah, my grandfather always said, you don't appreciate things until you get dirt under your nails, and that's about right. They've seen how it all works, and it's a cool opportunity.
Is he close to his goal?
I didn't look this morning when I last checked. I think they were about a third of the way, but I didn't look this morning. I meant to ask him that and didn't. But it's a worthy cause, and they actually have some neat little gift things you can get if you make a donation. So everybody should check it out. It's really neat, and I appreciate them joining us this morning on the show. And
it
guys,
was last
you know,
minute, too. They, like you
yeah,
said, they
was
saved
last
you
minute.
Because it was weird.
Yeah, I was like, boom. It's like we lost one and got him all of a sudden. So I appreciate them joining us. And let's see. I got a couple announcements to make. If you haven't heard the Christo Show on Wednesday mornings at 10 o'clock, you're missing great shows on the Great Ideas Radio Network. Christo, I think, has had like 8 or 9 shows now, which you can go back and listen to on Blog Talk Radio in the archives. If you missed them, you've had some great guests, and that show is going really well. And also DEF CON Conversations with John Dilley. If you haven't heard John's shows on Tuesday nights at 7, it's all about hot sauce and barbecue sauce, and he gets into all kinds of things. In fact, this week we've got a crowd calling in from the United Kingdom, somewhere over there, and that's going to be interesting. That'll be coming up Tuesday. Right, and they're in the hot sauce and barbecue sauce world over there in England somewhere. So if you haven't checked those shows out, check them out. John's got a great show. Christo's got a great show. And they've been doing it, like I said, like 6 or 7, 8 weeks, and it's going well. And we're also going to be adding more people to our lineup as we move this thing along with Brilliant Ideas Radio Network. We have Linky Moraris, who's going to be joining us, and Ann Shellman, who's the Anne of Green Gardens, and, of course, Jesse Jones.
George Geary.
And Franco and George Geary. George Geary, if you know George, he's been involved in pastry. He's a pastry chef, and he's got a whole lot of things going on. He's going to be doing a show about pastries and baking and travel. In fact, George is good friends with what's his name, Laurie? I already forgot the guy. My mind just went blank with the caviar guy. Good Lord. My mind just went blank.
Help me. Guy?
Yeah,
oh,
Caviar Green. My Lord. I just went blank.
Oh, Robin Leach.
Good Lord. Robin Leach. He's good friends with Robin Leach. In fact, those
I
two guys.
Thank you, man.
Champagne and caviar. Champagne and caviar.
Champagne and caviar.
I thought of him. Oh, my gosh. I'm 100 times I met him.
She doesn't like this word, but I had a brain fart there for a second. But anyway.
George, I don't believe you just said that.
George and Robin.
Oh, no. Oh, God, I just realized you said the word.
Yes, I did. Well, who cares? Anyway, George and Robin started the Food Networks, and which I don't know a lot of people know that, but they were the guys who actually originated the Food Network. So George is going to be part of our radio broadcast when we get this thing going. And our target for the 24/7, hopefully will be sometime in October. That's what we're shooting for if we get everything lined up. So we got all kinds of things coming along here, and lots of new people going to have their own show. And I wasted about 3 or 4 minutes of the time we have left. I'm going to give Laurie one more shot at a food news story.
Can I say something really quick? Can I just say something really
quick? You don't know how to say things quick, but yeah, go ahead.
No. This is very quick. You asked about his Kickstarter goal and where he was. I just went on to look. People, you need to hurry up because it says 11 days to go, and he still needs about $25,000 out of the
total. Wow. Okay.
So
everybody's
only at 522. So
everybody
hurry up
to
this
show.
Is important.
Gives like $5 or $10, he can do it.
He could. I know.
Yeah. All right. Now you can speak, Lori. I was quick.
It was a nice little quickie. So I hope they can get that. How much time do I have right now?
Yeah, we were asking for you for some food news if you had any. If you don't, you don't. I can talk and babble.
I have a ton of food news. No, I was. You know, actually, it's funny. I wanted to. I don't know if we had enough time. But I wanted to. Really, I think you should tell the audience about the corn that you cooked for me in the microwave.
Oh, yes. I don't know if Brian knows about this. If he does,
I don't know.
I think I'm
going to
take a nap now.
I was so excited. I'm telling you, I was jumping up and down. He was cracking up. He loved doing it. I was like clapping and jumping like it was Christmas morning when he was doing this. But go ahead, tell the quick little story.
All right. Well,
don't
okay,
tell
so
me
ready.
He wrapped it in bacon.
No. Okay.
No.
Guys, this is not my original idea. I stole this off YouTube. But I've done it before, and it works. It's marvelous. If you get corn on the cob and it's still in the husk, and everybody hates to take the husk off of corn,
pick off all the
strings and all the silk, and it's just a pain in the bunkus. I got a great way to do this, and you can do it in your microwave. You take a ear of corn. You don't have to do anything special with it. Just throw it in the microwave. Well, make sure it's not too big for your microwave, but throw it in your microwave so that it'll turn around without bumping into anything. Set the microwave for 4 minutes. Let it do its magic in the microwave in 4 minutes. When you pull it out of the microwave, make sure you have a hot pad in your hand because the thing is really hot. Take a knife, cut off the one end, not the end with the silks, the other end is the flat end. Cut it off to where you get to the cob. Cut it straight off all the way through the husk. Then you grab the end of the silk. This is the part that Laurie's jumping up and down about.
This is
the cool part. You grab the in with the silk, and you shake it 2 or 3 times, and the cob will fall out of the husk with no silks on it. It's
completely
cooked.
Clean, not a single hair on it.
And it's
cooked
great.
To perfection. And then you wrap it in foil, and you do each one, because you do it individual. You wrap it in foil each one, you know, after you do it, and then you've got all your corn right there, and you can put, like, your butter in, you know, the foil, or whatever spices you want, all the bay or something. You throw it in, and you just keep wrapping it in the foil
just
so all the corn
don't put
is
your
on.
Foil, don't put the foil in the microwave, though. That causes a whole thing
of
history.
But,
but
I could not believe
it.
I could not believe it. You grab it from the top where you would peel it, you know, once you cut the other end, and it just goes, boop, and it slides, like, right out. Perfectly clean, not a hair. I'm always peeling the glaciers off. Oh, my gosh, in 4 minutes. You don't
and
have
you ever tried doing the same thing with, you know, wrapping it in foil and throwing it on the grill in the husk?
Yeah, I've done it, but it doesn't work as well.
You've
got to peel
it
off. You've got to
peel
it
and clean it. I mean, it's just a different way
now,
to do it. It's just
all right,
a quick way. You
4 minutes in the microwave is a long cooking time for microwave. How soft is the corn?
It's perfect. Is it perfect,
Laurie? I mean, this depends. I was going to say, actually, it's perfect.
I mean, I don't,
like your wine,
I don't like,
if you want al dente, you're going to do 3 minutes. If you want a little on the softer side, just to chew it. Yeah, so you're right. It's kind of like, you know, your wine pairings. If you want a little, if you want your Shiraz or you want your Riesling, you know, it's just preference. But
and every microwave is different.
I don't like mushy corn.
Okay. Then you want 3 minutes.
Well, play with your microwave and find the opportune number for you and your microwave. It may be 3 minutes and 47 seconds. It may be 4 minutes and 12 seconds. It may be three minutes and 19 seconds. But whatever it is, Brian,
it's,
I'm telling
you,
it works.
Depending on the corn, if it's real fat.
It depends on the size of your microwave, like the popcorn. You know, you get microwave popcorn. You put it in, and they tell you to put the microwave for whatever time, and it never works.
It burns. Never works.
It never works. It either under pops or over pops. So you're constantly trying to figure out, you know, what the timing is for your microwave. And then all of a sudden, it's like it varies from bag to bag. And then you go like, oh, I can't. I've got the perfect timing now. And then you put the next bag in and it's perfect.
That was a good question. I agree. No, yeah,
so,
I agree.
Yeah, and every microwave is different, but ours is 4 minutes. And if you go on YouTube, just to give the guys credit, I don't know the guy I saw on YouTube, there's like 5 or 6 YouTube videos. If you go to YouTube and just and punch in corn on the cob in the microwave, they show you step-by-step how to do it, and it does work. There's an old man doing it. It's kind of funny. His wife's in the background laughing her ass off while the video's going. But
I was cracking up, didn't I? I was loving it. You were having fun watching me have fun.
we should post that one on the Brilliant Ideas Radio website. Post the
link.
Yeah,
I will. I'll put the one
you
with the funny
what?
Old
that's
man.
You know what? That's true. It's a good link.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so
that's a little tidbit. Anything else you'd like to add? Mark.
I'm done. I've
You're
overeaten.
Done.
I've overspoken. I'm definitely done.
All right. Well,
I'm done.
I guess, and you're done too.
It's a wrap.
Almost a wrap. Who do we got coming on next week? I don't remember. I always forget to do this part. Anyway, we got food.
Well, the guys
you
probably canceled this morning, they were so nice. They were a really nice email to you, apologizing. Maybe they'll be back next week.
Yeah, maybe they will. Sawyer, by the way, for those that were waiting to hear Sawyer, Sawyer is a cool band. They're actually from Israel, and they were calling in from Israel, but they had an emergency, so they're going to reschedule. And I don't know if you saw the promo, Brian. I told you to hold on to your matzo balls because they got a great sound. And it's called grunge country. But we'll have them on hopefully next week or two. And we've got some other guests. And I can't find my list. But Sunbless is always, she's always mad at me because I never remember who's coming on the next show. And I'm supposed to announce it. But anyway, you know, we're always here. We've been doing this almost 3 years. And there'll be some foodie people and some singers. And there'll be Brian making comments that makes me mad, and I'll be throwing him on the bus, and Laurie will be doing her food news, and it's the same thing.
Don't kill me.
Laurie.
All right.
Laurie, we're going to have to find a new host for the show, because I don't know about you, but I can't take this incompetence and unprofessionalism, you know.
Well, you're stuck with me, because the last time I checked, it said, wait a minute, let me look, Brilliant Ideas Foodie Radio. Okay. Oh.
Hey, we can come up with a name.
It's always all about him.
Yes, it is all about me. All right, we're gonna call it quits. I'm going to play a little Dixie Still, which is one of my favorite bands we've had on the show. And everyone have a nice weekend. We will see you next week. Don't forget to listen in Tuesday night to John Dilley and also Wednesday morning to Christo. And we will see you next Saturday.
Hey,
have
y'all,
a great
we're
week,
Dixie
guys.
Steel.
And you're listening to our good friends right here on Brilliant Ideas.
I was wrong, but you were me. Yeah, I got mad, 'cause you said those things. I called your bluff, so you walked out. So I guess we're
when you thought radio was safe. A new kind of radio is on its way. Food, music, and friends. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Coming in 2014.